It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Most of us will have difficult conversations at some point in our lives, but few of us are faced with negotiations that are literally matters of life and death.
Police crisis negotiators are called in to resolve situations where hostages are taken, someone is threatening suicide, or there is an armed standoff. Crisis negotiators are trained to deal with people who are facing their worst moments and feel like they've run out of options.
These standoffs aren't everyday occurrences, but they happen often enough that a group was formed in 1998 to train Wisconsin law enforcement. Two of the board members of the Wisconsin Crisis Negotiators Association join us now for a look at their jobs and lessons in listening that we can apply in our everyday lives. Detective Bradley Tatro is the crisis negotiation team leader for the Marathon County Sheriff's Office, and Lieutenant Trevor Bilgo works for the Brown County Sheriff's Office. Lieutenant Bilgo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Detective Tatro, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Detective Tatro, let's start with you. Are you seeing more calls for crisis negotiators in police work, both in your own precinct and around the state?
So in my general location, we have about 176,000 for a population, and we have not seen an increase over the last, I'd say, 3 years. But it does, like every other year, kind of come in spurts.
And Lieutenant Bilgo, can you spell out the basics for us? What is involved? What kind of calls might you get for crisis negotiation?
Sure. When a crisis negotiator team or negotiators called out, requested, it's usually calls that are above a basic patrolman's level based on their expertise. And it could be anything from a suicidal individual, person in a mental health crisis, suicidal barricade, or an armed situation, all the way up to assisting the SWAT and tactical units on a tactical call out.
Obviously a very difficult situation, Detective Tatro. Can you talk about some of the key tactics, maybe even skills we could call them, that you use when you're called to help resolve a crisis like this?
Sure. The biggest skill set that we utilize in a negotiation is our active listening skills. Those are things from open-ended questions, emotional labeling, paraphrasing, effective pauses, minimal encouragers, I messages, summarizing and mirroring. We use those techniques along with time to kind of de-escalate a situation.
Lieutenant Bilgo, I might think, okay, either you've got this kind of skill or you don't. Can we train people on this? Is there effective training that helps people develop these skills?
Yeah, everybody can be trained in it, but just like any skill, sometimes you just have a natural act for it. And it, like any skill, if you don't train it and practice with it, you can lose it. So this is a skill that crisis negotiators do need to keep up on, or in the time you're called upon, you may not be as proficient or as effective as you could be.
And Detective Tatro, how do you train in active listening?
So for my team, we train 10 times a year. So 10 months out of the year, we're having our own training. We do scenario-based training. We train with our SWAT team. We set up fairly elaborate scenarios with role players so that we are getting, you know, kind of a live goal and a live use of our skills. And then, you know, something that you can use every day in conversations with people where you can use those skills and just keep them fresh.
Lieutenant Bilgo, you mentioned, you know, this the specialized training here might be when that line police officer, it's something a little beyond their normal duties. That said, is this kind of training becoming more standard for police officers, whatever job they're doing?
I do believe so. There is the crisis intervention training that your baseline police officers are, I think, pretty across the board getting trained in. And that is for that baseline officer to be able to deal with some of the mental health crises and individuals that they may be seeing out on the road. There is an uptick even with our local dispatch center that the dispatchers have requested training or some advanced training, since they are the ones that take those initial calls for us, on some effective crisis negotiator skills to assist them as well.
Detective Tatro, a word that gets thrown around a lot these days with policing is the idea of de-escalation, which sounds great in theory, fantastic. I imagine in practice with, you know, a very emotional situation for whoever you're dealing with, it might be easier said than done. What can de-escalation look like in a difficult situation?
Sure. So de-escalation definitely is a buzzword that is thrown around a lot lately. It is a great tool. It's a great objective. We have to realize also that there are situations where de-escalation is not appropriate, when there's exclusion and we've exhausted all other options. But what it looks like when we are having that de-escalation, it's a good communication narrative with the person that we're, our subject. We're taking time. We are doing our best to try and understand their point of view from whatever issue is arising. You see it a lot with politics. Let's touch on that very, very shortly. Everyone has their own idea on their political stance, and it's easy to get into an argument with somebody over politics. But if you take the time and you use active listening skills and empathy, you can try and understand where they're coming from. So in a situation where things are elevated, if you're doing your best to get an understanding of their point of view, that's going to help you build that rapport with that person, eventually influence them, and then have a change in behavior where hopefully everything ends peacefully.
Lieutenant Bilgo, what I think I'm hearing from both of you is, you know, we can have some general rules and principles in place, but in practice, there's no one size fits all. How much do you have to tailor your active listening, your interaction based on each specific situation?
Yeah, it's a constant change of venue for us. That's why we train our teams. I think most teams do that. You don't have just one or two primary negotiators because maybe a certain person on your team is a better fit for that individual, or maybe they just don't like the tone of your voice at that time and wants to hear somebody else. So it's very flexible. It's constantly changing, and we need to be able to adapt. And the biggest thing is we need to just sometimes stop talking and listen, as Detective said. And once we get to that point, we can usually achieve our goal. It just takes time.
I got Detective Tatro, I can imagine you don't get to pick your schedule for when this happens, right? Are you in effect on call, 24/7 some weeks if that situation happens and they need somebody now?
Yeah, so our team is comprised of 11 members, and you could say that we're all on call 24/7. It doesn't mean that every member has to respond at every call out, but we like to have, you know, 6 or 7 if we can respond to each call out. So we have that ability to cover all the responsibilities and that ability to change negotiator if needed.
Lieutenant Bilgo, you are both part of this statewide organization, the Wisconsin Crisis Negotiators Association. Like, how much, you know, knowledge sharing, how much idea sharing do you do with your colleagues around the state?
I always say every conference we go to is an opportunity for networking, and networking at the negotiator level, it really is priceless. Even if we only get together a couple times a year, there's a lot of information we can pick up from each other, from tactics to what might have worked, what didn't, from correctional settings to, you know, in a big city or a rural area. Everything changes for us in law enforcement constantly. And to be able to have a statewide network that we're able to tap into as either leaders of the team or as members of a team through an association to share that information, it really is priceless in our line of work.
We are talking about police crisis negotiation with two people who actually do that job, Lieutenant Trevor Bilgo with the Brown County Sheriff's Office, Detective Bradley Tatro, Marathon County Sheriff's Office, both on the board of the Wisconsin Crisis Negotiators Association. Okay, now you both do a job that gets portrayed in pop culture, TV shows, movies, and maybe people even think they understand your job based on what they see in pop culture. I want to ask each of you, you know, what you see in TV movies that gets it right or gets it wrong. Detective Tatro, let's start with you.
Off the top of my head, I can think of the movie The Other Guys, and they're negotiating. And obviously that is a comedy, right, and meant to not portray it properly, but it's about as bad as it could get as a negotiator in that standpoint. So I think with the trend towards de-escalation in policing, some of the shows are looking at negotiation in a better light and more accurately. However, it's, you know, not made for TV stuff. This takes a long time. It cannot be very exciting when you're talking for a long time and listening for a long time. So it's not really made for Hollywood type stuff.
I'm glad to hear that The Other Guys is not an accurate portrayal of policing. That reassures me a lot, I think. Lieutenant Bilgo, how about you? Any pop culture examples that pop to your mind, for better or worse?
Well, the classic movie, The Negotiator, and we always joke, we ask new applicants, have they watched that movie? There is a lot in there. Sometimes you do have some conflicts, sometimes between the TAC teams or your TAC command and negotiators. Negotiators want to talk, and they want to take time. And sometimes the TAC guys want to move and get things done. But over the years, as Detective said too, we both work with our individual SWAT teams, our TAC guys. So we all have a mutual understanding of what our each other's roles are. Sometimes they really portray that in the movies, a complete separation. And that's not the reality of it. But you have to train and, again, get that team understanding to move forward with it.
All right, getting back to real-world policing. Detective Tetro, younger officers, do they show an interest in getting this kind of training, even if they're not going to be that specialized negotiator?
So our agency does a good job in training de-escalation, even at the range when we're there for training. So our younger officers are getting that training. We have had a few that have shown interest in actually being part of the team and getting some more advanced training, which is fantastic. And there's opportunities out there for them to do that. Our team is also comprised of dispatchers and corrections officers. So it's not just for us sworn police officers that are going to get this training and put it to use. So there is that interest, and we are, you know, fostering that.
And Lieutenant Bilgo, Detective Tetra earlier mentioned that, you know, at some point you have to make a read on when negotiation isn't the answer. This isn't what you need to do now. How do you draw that line? How do you say, okay, this is not a negotiation situation, or at least, or maybe not anymore?
That comes usually on our end. That'll come through as a team leader on my role, my shoulders, responsibility, along with the SWAT commander. And that just comes through training and trust and constant assessment throughout the course of the negotiation or the call out that we may be on. And it's that tight network of trust and building that relationship between the two leaders. And realizing at this point, we may have to assist or get the person in a better position for a tactical operation or a movement. And that is hard for the negotiators to deal with if it truly does go that direction, because they have worked so hard for it. But there is a point in a reality that we do know that it could be a tactical resolution instead.
Detective Tetra, if I can get a little personal here, I mean, this is obviously a very stressful job, or it seems like it would be to me. What do you and other negotiators do to take care of yourselves? You know, if something has not gone, you haven't gotten the outcome you want to, how do you get past that and be ready for the next call?
So a very important part of our, not only our negotiation team, but our other special teams as well, is to debrief an incident so that one, the incident is concluded, and everything is wrapped up investigative wise. You get together, you sit down, you go over the incident, the goods, the bads, what we could do better next time. And then, you know, we have peer support in our agency. So if you are still feeling that you need some help with something, you can reach out to a peer support member, talk with them. They can help you guide through any other services that you might need.
Lieutenant Bilgo, along the same lines, do you feel like there's enough of this kind of support out there in your own sheriff's department and around the state?
I think as a state, we can be doing better. There are some agencies that are a little behind, and we need to be able to help them out as well. But within my own agency, very similar to detectives there, we have the same setup that we will debrief, that we do have mental health counselors, professionals available to us, that if we need to take it to a further level for our officers, we are definitely going to do that to support them to get through it, because it can be a very emotional roller coaster if it is an extended period of time as that primary negotiator.
Now, everybody's going to have, you know, difficult conversations in their lives, hopefully not as difficult as the ones we're talking about. Detective Tatro, though, are there skills, concepts you've learned as part of this job that you learned in your daily life that you think other people could use for difficult negotiations, difficult conversations?
Yeah, so I think one of the most powerful things that we learned as negotiators is emotional labeling. And it's something that you can use, I mean, constantly throughout your daily life. If I'm talking with one of my children or my spouse, they're upset. It's an, you know, not necessarily a crisis situation, but they're elevated. And I can throw the emotional label out there that, you know, you sound like you're pretty stressed out, and that'll get them talking. And then I can listen to what they're saying as to why they're feeling that way. Or if they're not feeling stressed out, they're going to tell me what emotion actually is. You know, they're not going to be upset that I labeled it incorrectly, but it's going to give us a talking point. So anytime there's that kind of conflict, you know, that's one of our skills that I find very useful.
And that's interesting, Lieutenant Bilgo. And again, I can imagine this in daily life. People might take it as a sign of respect or appreciate that you're having a go at understanding what's going on with them. Is that a difference maker, do you think?
100%. And they'll, like you said, they'll call you out if you labeled it wrong. But the point is, if they're talking to us and we're listening and that conversation is happening between us as negotiators and our individual we're working with, they're not doing something else to either harm themselves or someone else. And as long as we can continue that, whatever little hook we use to get them to give us feedback, that's a positive in our world.
I'm super interested in my job and the idea of active listening, always trying to get better at it myself. Detective Tatro, are there skills, are there techniques, I guess you'd say, that we can use to learn to be better active listeners?
You know, there's kind of 8 skills that are out there that are the kind of foundation of active listening. I spoke about them earlier. It's the open-ended questions. It's really the focus is to listen to understand and not listening to respond. Most of us try and listen to respond. We have a response that we've already come up with in our mind that we want to get out, and we're just waiting for that break in that conversation so you can get your piece out instead of just waiting. Listening to what they have to say, and then giving yourself some time to formulate a response after they're done.
Lieutenant Bilgo, do you have advice to add on making us better active listeners? Again, regardless of our line of work.
He stole it right from me. That's he took it first, and that's great. But that's exactly what I was going to say was in our world and just dealing with people and just in general, I think we all could just take a little more time to listen before we're all so quick to say something before we probably should.
We'll leave it there. Lieutenant Bilgo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
And Detective Tatro, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's greatly appreciated.
Detective Bradley Tatro is the Crisis Negotiation Team Leader for the Marathon County Sheriff's Office. Lieutenant Trevor Bilgo is with the Brown County Sheriff's Office. They're both on the board of the Wisconsin Crisis Negotiators Association.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, we'll visit 2 Wisconsin clubhouses where people dealing with mental illness can find support, job training, and social connection.
They have a support system. They come in here, they have friends, they have stuff to do. It's refilled that kind of internal purpose.
That's coming up next here on WPR News.